Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio, and we start out tonight on a very sad but not really unexpected note. The remains have been identified that were found as belonging to Dylan Redwine. They were found near Middle Mountain Road by Vallecito Lake. A search team that included some specially trained dogs searched the area when it was covered in ice and snow. And I wonder if the dogs hit on something then in that area, and that's why law enforcement was really hell-bent on going back to that area. They were really focusing in on the Middle Mountain area. Law enforcement had to know something. I mean, why did they focus in? It's a big area that they've got cordoned off as a crime scene. That's just a guess on my part that maybe the search dogs hit something in that area and it was very definitive. And they knew they just had to wait for the snow to melt, and that's what happened. Law enforcement says this was not an accident, it was not an animal, and that leaves murder in my book. I'd like to welcome to the show now a very special person. Her name is Teresa, and Teresa is one of Mark Redwine's dearest friends, and she's here tonight to speak for him and to tell us how he is doing and the family is doing. Teresa, thank you so much for coming on the show on what must be a very sad and emotional night for you. Thank you so much.
Very emotional, Tricia, and thank you for having me.
How is Mark doing?
Well, Mark is not doing all that great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine.
None of us are, but he's not doing well at all. It's been a very sad, very hard day for everyone involved, the whole family,
mm-hmm.
not just Mark, but Elaine and Corey.
Oh, sure.
Well, it's just been a very hard, sad day.
And Mark found out today, is that correct, or was it yesterday?
No, it was today. He was called mm-hmm. into the sheriff's office. When he was called into the sheriff's office, he thought he was going in to identify some belongings that they found, some objects, objects that they found. And when he got there, it became more than just objects.
So they didn't let on that they had, that's what everybody thought. That it was just objects, that it was, I'm thinking like the backpack, you know, I didn't hear anybody say, well, they must have found Dylan. So the police actually did a very good job of keeping that under wraps. I'm going to ask you to speculate, and if you don't want to, please do not hesitate to say so, and I won't bother you with it. Why do you think the police did it that way? Why do you think they told him, hey, we have some items, rather than just saying it's very important you get down here? Why do you think they did it that way?
Well, in my opinion, because they wanted both parents there at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark was not there. And being law enforcement friendly, because I was raised around a lot of law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
they usually like to have both parents there when they get that kind of information.
Right. Well, that makes sense. And Teresa, I'm going to be really honest with you, as I have been with Mark, and I have appreciated the fact that Mark Redwine has come on the show to talk about the people out there who think he is guilty. And I don't know if that includes law enforcement or not. Law enforcement has already said that the parents are cooperating and there are no suspects. Now, what they're really doing, I don't know. But I want to address some of these issues, and I'm hoping to have Mark on when he is able to come on. We can certainly understand why he was not able today. But I want to address some of these issues with you, if I may, Teresa, okay? I'm going to ask you flat out. Do you have any thought that Mark did something to Dylan?
No, ma'am.
And why is that?
I have known Mark for almost, not quite, but almost 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan was and is the light of his life.
Mm-hmm.
His two older children was basically taken out of his life he tried to keep Corey in his life. He loves Corey with all his heart, no matter how much hard feelings Corey has towards him.
Mm-hmm.
He has never let that get in the way of how he feels towards Corey. And Dylan, he would never do anything to harm any of his children in any way, shape, or form, no matter what his level of his anger is. And there's nothing, unless it come out of Mark's mouth himself and he said he did it, there's nothing, anything anybody could say or do to make me feel otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I
go ahead, please.
I don't just know Mark, but I know other family members as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I feel this way.
Can you elaborate? I know you don't want to say anything negative at a time like this, and I appreciate that, and I understand that. We're just trying to understand the dynamic, because there are a lot of people out there who feel that Mark is guilty. I don't think it's a secret that Elaine, his ex-wife, his former wife, is one of them. I don't know to what level she believes it, but I got that feeling from the Dr. Phil show. You know Elaine. Why would she think Mark did it? I mean, why would there be a faction in the family that is convinced that Mark did something to Dylan?
Well, I have never met Elaine,
mm-hmm.
so I cannot say on her part why she thinks that. I just know that she does have a lot of hatred towards Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And as to what reasons, I don't know. But I do know there is a lot of hatred there. And what factors that in, I could not tell you.
Right. How did you've known Mark for 5 years. Do you mind telling us how you got to know him, how your relationship came about?
Through his sister. His sister mm-hmm. lives here close by me. Me and her are very dear friends.
Mm-hmm.
And his sister told me one day, you really need to talk to my brother. He really needs somebody to talk to. And that's how me and Mark became close. We started talking. He needed somebody to talk to. And that's how we started talking.
And you became close. I think that's good. I have male friends that I'm very close with. Very, very close with. And it's nothing more than a very close friendship. And I think that's great when it can happen. His sister, I take it, and his family members, are they standing behind him 100%?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am,
okay.
They are. As a matter of fact, when Mark was at the sheriff's office today, he called me, and they were calling him back in, and I contacted two of his sisters while he was there.
Mm-hmm. And are they going to be, I guess they're going to be traveling out fairly soon.
Well, I'm not sure about his sister that lives here, as she's getting ready to have surgery.
Oh, dear. Okay. Oh, boy. That's just the last thing they need then.
I cannot answer for her. Now, the other ones, I really cannot elaborate. I mean, I cannot speak for them.
And that's fine. But basically, his family is standing behind him, correct? 100%. Okay. We're talking with Teresa. Teresa is a very close friend of Mark Redwine. Mark has appeared on this show on several occasions, and very sad news tonight, although not unexpected, unfortunately, very sad news that Dylan Redwine, his 14-year-old son that went missing November 2012, partial remains were found today, and there's lots of speculation going on. We just know a fraction, my friends, of what is really happening. And I want to remind everybody, when you post something or, like myself, actually say something, your words that you type and you say have power. So be sure of what you're thinking and what you're saying before you go and accuse anybody. Teresa, one of the reasons I really wanted you on the show tonight is Mark's told us something on this show several times, and it has created a problem with the perception of him being innocent, guilty, whatever you happen to think. And let me tell you what he said. he was adamant that nobody need to search anywhere by in Middle Mountain. It was silly to search there. No need to go there. Dylan wouldn't be there. Let's look out of state. Let's go out of state. Then he is found pretty much where Mark was telling everybody not to look. Can you understand how people that don't know Mark would go, hold on, there's something not right about that? Do you understand that feeling?
Yes, I do. Now, in light of that, I was in Colorado for 2.5 weeks at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, the reason, I believe the reason he says this is because at one point in time, a certain time of the year, if I'm not, now, I may be wrong about this. I'm not sure. Okay, I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not mistaken, part of that road is closed off at a certain time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not positive.
Okay.
But that may be why he was thinking that way. I'm not trying to say 100% sure, but
mm-hmm.
that could be as to why. Now, I do know when I was there, he showed me that when we was going down the road, he says, now that road there is closed off on certain times of the year because it's impassable.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't get through it.
And so you think that's why he was telling people to stay away from there. But he was focusing on going out on his search for Dylan. He was focusing on the lower 48 states. He sent me some posters right away of Dylan, and he was trying to go out and stir up media interest in the search for Dylan. He has never come right out and said this, but I think it's safe to say that you kind of got the feeling that maybe he thought Elaine knew more than she did. Again, I'm just kind of basing it on what he said on air here. Can you address that at all, or?
Well, they both felt that one thought that they knew more than they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on his part, because kind of like on my part as well, it's like I told him, you know, well, maybe if Elaine had someone pick him up, maybe that's a good thing if she was hiding him because he would be safe.
Right.
And that's
I agree. Absolutely. I mean, let's put it this way. That would be a much better scenario than what we have right now. So,
That's probably what was playing in his mind. You know, if Elaine had him, he would be safe, and then we wouldn't have to be going through this of what we're going through now.
Exactly. We do have some questions here in the chat room, and I apologize if I'm a little off kilter. I've been rushing around today, and I'm not as prepared as I normally am, so please forgive me if I'm doing a lot of ums and ahs, and I have a cat yelling in the background, I have a dog scratching, and God knows what else is going to come crashing through here at any moment. We do have a question. Okay, let's see. Someone said that Dylan was thrown over a cliff where he was found. Have you heard that?
I'm going to be honest with you. No, I haven't, because after I got the phone call from Mark today, I turned my computer off and just turned it back on about an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
My phone has been blowing up off the hook.
Oh, I can imagine.
And didn't even have time to turn my computer on until about an hour ago. So I do know that where they did find the very small amount of remains of Dylan was on the side of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
From my understanding, that was set up higher than what actually was Mark's house.
Mm-hmm.
And to drive, it was 10 miles. But from my understanding, from the news reports that I've seen online, you could actually walk it in about 10 minutes and look out Mark's front door and actually almost see it.
Really? Well,
that's interesting. From the news reports that I've seen online.
Uh-huh. So when you say he was found on the side of the mountain, could could it logically, and again, I hate to keep trying to put words in your mouth, but could you logically say maybe he was thrown off a cliff? And I have a reason. I'm going somewhere with this. So is that, you kind of feel that maybe he was?
I mean, you can't rule anything out.
Sure.
And until the facts are in.
That's true. And the reason I ask is, a lot of people have been talking about the Dr. Phil show. Let me ask you about the Dr. Phil show. First of all, we're talking with Teresa, a very close friend of Mark Redwine. Tragic news today. Mark and Elaine's son, Dylan, his partial remains were found by Middle Mountain. And that's what we're dealing with right now. And Teresa is here to talk about her good friend Mark and what has been going on with this terribly sad situation. You saw the Dr. Phil show. Did you feel it was an ambush on Mark?
Well, okay, let me tell you what I think about those shows. Don't even try to get me started on them because
okay.
I've been on the Sally Jesse Raphael show. Those shows mm-hmm. are all about ratings, and they're all a joke. And I advise okay. Mark not to even go from the beginning. Those shows are all about ratings.
mm-hmm.
And I don't believe in those shows. And they do what they can do for their ratings.
And so you feel that Mark was ambushed. I'm putting words in your mouth, and I do apologize, but you feel that Mark was set up. Because let's be honest, it made him look horrible. It made him look guilty. You know,
yes,
it did.
Now, they did promise him the show was going to be kept about finding Dylan. And when he got there, that was not what the show was about.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get angry about it. But they do what they got to do to keep their ratings.
Mm-hmm. So you think, when you say you got angry about it, what did you say to Mark? Did you say, my God, look what happened, what can we do? I mean, what? Tell us about that conversation.
I just told him he shouldn't have went.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a very lengthy discussion about it, and I told him that I felt like at that point, maybe he should have just got up and walked out, and it took all he had to sit there.
Mm-hmm.
It really did.
Yeah, that was pretty torturous, I have to admit, for him.
And it was. It was, very much so.
So what did you think about him having two chances not to take the lie detector test and his reasoning for it?
Well, he took one for law enforcement.
Right, and we found out. He told us the last time he was on here.
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead.
On the show, he went to take the test, and they asked him a disqualifying question.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there. He was going to take the test. They asked him a question. He answered truthfully.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
What was that question again? Go ahead.
They asked him something to the effect of, do you feel up to taking this test or something? And he just flat out said no, but he was going to mm-hmm. take it anyway.
Right.
And the guy just threw it up in the air, and they made it look like he refused. I mean, he could have took the test, but then again, they do things for ratings. I'm not defending Mark. He has reasons for doing what he does, and mm-hmm. I don't always agree with him. I'm going to be the first one to admit.
Right.
And sometimes we get in our tiffs about not agreeing on things.
Mm-hmm.
But those shows do what they got to do for their ratings.
I have
good feelings about those talk shows. Period. None of them.
And I think everybody knows that. It came across so poorly because the other time he couldn't take the test was because he had a fairly good amount of alcohol in him at the time, and you know, a lot of people. People can draw their own conclusions from that, and they're usually not good. Now, I want to give Mark Redwine credit. He came on the show, and he faced the tough questions. and I told him I was going to ask him. And I appreciate you, Teresa, friend of Mark Redwine, coming on the show and answering some questions too, because it's good to get a different look at the your insight, because you're so close with him. And that's what we want to do on this show. We're not about ratings. We don't have ratings. We have no commercials. There's no money involved other than I pay for I actually pay money to do this. I get a sponsor, but my point is we have no outside agenda. All we want to do is get to the truth. And by coming on tonight, you are really helping us get to that truth. Now, there is something I want to address with you as well. And I'm going to address this with Mark next time we talk. The last time he was on, he told us very honestly that that law enforcement told him that he failed the first lie detector test miserably. Now, there's a chance law enforcement was lying. Let's face it. They don't have to tell him the truth. But if I remember correctly, Mark in the beginning said that law enforcement told him it was inconclusive. And I felt like that was a big story change. Do you remember him ever saying it was inconclusive or not?
At first they told him that he failed miserably. Then they told him it was inconclusive. Then they come out in the public, law enforcement did, and said it was inconclusive.
Well, that's pretty wacky. Can't make up their minds. They're all talking about the same test there. You would think that they would get their ducks in a row there and do that and tell exactly what happened. Teresa, tell us something about Mark that we don't know that you would like us to know.
Well, the first thing that I would like people to actually know about Mark is they think because he doesn't show emotion in public that he doesn't mm-hmm. have emotion. And that's where they are so very wrong, because Mark keeps his emotions behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I was there, I have seen it. I held his hands while he cried for his son for 2.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And these people just, they don't see that side of him. Because he's a man, he thinks that he has to put on the manly front in public.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
99.9% of men feel that way.
That's true. Absolutely. And
they don't show emotion in public.
Exactly. And I think it's important to remember, and I try and remember this too, that we're not in their shoes. And sometimes you need to step back and take a look. You know, I'm on the fence about this. I don't know what happened. Yeah, I have questions about Mark, and I've asked him those questions, and he's been very forthright. Elaine I've spoken to, she has been very forthright with me as well, and very wonderful too. So it's here's another problem I see, Teresa, and then I'm going to take some callers, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Mark... Like I said, it was well known that Mark thought maybe Elaine had something to do with it. And like you said, Dylan was taken somewhere as being kept alive, which would have been fantastic. Well, now you have Elaine who believes Mark did it, number one. And number two, Mark is accusing her of doing it. Now you have found your son's partial remains. So Mark knows it wasn't Elaine now. Can you understand her red hot anger? If she is really that angry, I would completely understand it.
Well, yeah. Until I find the truth, I would feel angry. But until you do find the truth, wait until the truth comes out before you go all out.
Mhm.
But I do. As a parent, I do.
Right.
As a parent, grandparent, I do. Absolutely.
And you feel that Mark Redwine has been totally and completely upfront with you?
Well, as far as I can tell, yes.
Right. This is, and again, I do appreciate you coming on, because it's a hard day for you two and for anybody close to the Redwine family.
Absolutely.
Our hearts are just breaking it. Oh, my God, we did not want to hear this news. We have a couple of callers. We're going to go to Rain here. Rain, Are you there, my dear?
I am, Tricia. Hello, Teresa.
Okay. Hold on one second. I want to bring somebody else in. My unofficial sidekick. Hey, how are you doing, Michael?
Hi, Tricia. Hi, Rainey. And hi, Teresa. I'm so sorry for everything.
Let's go. Thank you, Michael. Let's go to Rain first, and then Michael will go to you second. Rain, do you have a question or a comment for Teresa?
Teresa, I know how you feel. Everyone's devastated. And as we talked earlier today, I know I get everything that you're saying. I really don't have any questions for Teresa, Tricia, but I would like to let all your listeners know I have been talking with Mark Redwine.
Mm-hmm.
I have talked with Mark Redwine now for, I guess, what, 2 months maybe? Month, 2 months? We've had several long conversations. I've talked with Mark today.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on the phone with Mark, he was pretty devastated. He sounded like a father that had lost a child.
Mm-hmm.
While I was on the phone with him today, of course, he's got news reporters out in front of his house. I was told by him, I do not know if it's true, but I'm going to go ahead and bring it out.
Okay.
That Elaine drove by, yelled murderer out the window, and said, F you.
Now, whoa, back up.
Stop.
Hold on. Are you sure that would Elaine Redwine? I mean, maybe someone that knows her, but I cannot see Elaine herself.
Yes, ma'am.
Doing
it
that.
Was Elaine. Yes, ma'am. They turned around in Mark Redwine's driveway. And it was Corey's girlfriend driving.
And Elaine leaned out and yelled that?
Yes, ma'am, she did. And
okay,
I was told hand gestures, like she was trying to sign language to him. And a reporter was walking up to Mark's house to speak to him when this happened. Yes, ma'am.
Did they catch it on video? Do you know?
No, there was no video. The reporter was just walking up to the porch to speak to him.
This is Teresa, who is speaking right now. Teresa is a close friend of Mark Redwine. We have Rain, who is the official booker, if you will. Yeah, she helps me book the guests on the show. And Rain and Teresa sound an awful lot alike. So, ladies, when you start to talk, if you could just say, this is Teresa, this is Rain, so we know who is who here. That is really surprising to me. Again, I would think I wouldn't do that in a situation, but I can't say that. And my heart just breaks for Elaine. You know, she was accused of taking her son. Now her son is dead. She thinks Mark did it. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying I understand. And, you know, it's horrible for Mark's family to see this. There is so much hate and sadness here that it is beyond heartbreaking. Michael in Minnesota, your thoughts or comments, please.
Well, I have a question, and Trish, you know I've thought this a while now, but
yes.
Teresa, can you talk about the wildlife that is around Mark Redwine's house? I'm anxious to know. I read a report online, and it said this is not the activity of animals, and I'm wondering, from what I understand, the remains were scattered. I mean, there's only very few partial remains that were recovered. So obviously wild animals had something to do with the disbursement of the body parts. I don't understand. First of all, I'd like to know if there's bears in the area or something that could have attacked poor Dylan and hauled him off and led him to the cliff, or maybe he fell off while trying to run away from them or something. But I don't understand how the police can completely negate animal activity. That doesn't make sense to me. Can anyone speak to that?
Teresa, go first, please.
Yes. There is bear. There is cougar. There is a lot of wild animal. He lives at the very top of a mountain with nothing but a lot of woods around. There is all kinds of wild animals. When the canine forensic lady was there with her dogs, she ran across the same problem, ran in almost face to face with a bear while in the
woods. Now, are these grizzly bears?
I'm not sure what kind of bear. I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't know. I'm not that familiar with the different types of bear, which I should be, but I'm not.
I think it's probably a black bear. I live in the same type of mountains, and it would be black bear. Grizzlies in our area are very rare. They're mostly in Idaho and Montana and Yellowstone and Glacier Park and those areas. But black bears do attack. We had a black bear attack and kill a young boy here a few years ago. Very dangerous. So absolutely. Continue, Michael.
Oh,
or Teresa.
I'm listening to Teresa.
Teresa,
yeah,
yes. Teresa, I'm sorry. Continue.
Well, I do know that there, because several times when I was at Mark's, you know, and I was to go outside, a couple of times I was walking outside at night, and he was informed me, you know, just be very, very careful. Very
mm-hmm.
careful when you go outside at night. Granted, it was too cold for the bear to be out, but it wasn't too cold for, like, the mountain lions and stuff like that to be out. I was not familiar with that. I'm from the city. I'm not used to that type of stuff.
So, and that's what Michael and I have talked about. Is it possible that Dylan went for a walk and was attacked by a live animal? But law enforcement is saying no, absolutely
not.
How can
they say that? How can they say that?
I don't know. There's something, they're holding back something, and it's big. Because how could they say that? They've got something. I can't imagine what it is. I'm going to go to Rain right now. Rain, I think I may have interrupted you, but I was just so taken aback by that story about Elaine. I'm not going to accuse anybody of lying. I just have a hard time believing it really was Elaine. But if it was, you know what? I get it. I do.
I want to go back to, if you don't mind, Tricia, about
this is
the
Rain.
Animals.
This is Rain.
Oh.
Okay. I just want to say this
is
Rain. It's Rain and Tricia.
Yeah, this is Rain.
So it sounds like I'm faking it, and I have the same person pretending to be two guests. So this is Rain.
Go ahead, Rain. It's me.
Okay.
This is going to be a little rough, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. Dylan's remains were disturbed, possibly by coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, one clavicle and two femur bones is all that has been found. If there's
mm-hmm.
more, I do not know. This is, you know, it's devastating to me, just like it is with everyone, considering I'm talking about a young child here. And the reason why they know it was coyotes because of, I guess it was a phalange bone, finger bone, whatever, that was found in coyote fecal matter.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be the best way to put it. So
a pack of coyote could have attacked Dylan easily.
It's anything's possible. I do know from talking with Mark, of course, everything, you know, I've talked with Mark, that during the months of November, I guess in the winter months, I guess it's the river or the creek that runs in front of his house on the opposite side of the road. He says it's very low during that time of the year. It's the lowest time that it is. He
mm-hmm.
said it's very easy to walk across that creek to get to the other side. To my knowledge, I don't know what other items were found as far as if his backpack or anything like that was found. And if I did, I couldn't tell you guys anyway, but I don't
right.
know any of that. But, you know, we throwed out theories out there. Could have Dylan walked across the creek? Because Mark had said in the past that the scent dog picked up Dylan's scent 50 feet out. Now, I'm not defending Mark. I'm just relaying everything that I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
Could have Dylan walked across the creek and something happened? Because apparently if you
right.
go straight across the creek, it's not that far of a distance. It's not the 10 miles around.
I see the kind of a cut. There's a shortcut, so it's not that long of a walk is what you're saying.
It's not that long of a walk. His remains were found in a drainage-type area. What was found? That does not mean that that's where his remains were placed.
Mm-hmm.
That means that either animals have drug remains there, could have been that the remains there and the rest have been drug off.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a sad situation for Elaine and Mark. And my only wish and hope is that they two could come together. Their son is dead. Put this behind them and give their son a proper memorial that this child needs. There's so many things that's going on between them two that everybody can figure out. It has to do with past divorce and things like that. That I think the anger from that has really overtaken both of their emotions. And if Mark's guilty, he's guilty. Justice will serve. But I'm like everyone. I guess I'm unique in a way. I need the evidence first. Law enforcement hasn't given us any evidence. If Mark was guilty, and he may be, why wasn't he arrested today? What are they missing? If Dylan was harmed in his vehicle when they did a search of his vehicle, if Mark had to drive around, why wasn't Mark's vehicle confiscated, kept, and Mark arrested then? So what are we missing? And
well,
people are asking, why was Mark out of town? Why the search? Mark went out of town the Tuesday or Monday before the search was announced. Mark was on the road driving. He was working. So everybody's got in their head that he went and ran away and hid. Mark was gone. He was at orientation going to do his job.
Okay, I want to back up
Thanks,
here. Rain, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Rain. I just want to back up. So we're certain because, you know, we're certain that Mark was already gone when the search was announced. He was already out of town. That's what you're saying, right?
Yes, he left Tuesday, I think. He was in Denver, and then he was doing his orientation, and then when the police had called Mark to come back to Durango, Mark was in Indiana.
Let me ask you something.
Mark was getting ready on his next drive, per what he told me, that his next load when he was leaving would have been Arkansas.
Let me ask you something. I'm going to put this out as a hypothetical. It is a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything, okay?
Okay.
What if you found out that that piece of information was not true, that Mark heard about the search and left? Would that change your opinion?
Yes.
Okay. I'm taking your word for it.
That he lied to me, that would totally change my opinion of anybody. Anybody
okay.
that I find out that would lie to me, that's going to change my opinion.
I don't know. I'm assuming that he was out of town when this was announced, because I knew he was going on the road at some point. And he was doing the crusade for Dylan in conjunction with what he was doing for a living. So I think that was a good idea to combine the two. Teresa, very close friend with Mark Redwine, again, thank you for coming on this very, very sad and emotional night. I can speak on behalf of everybody on Web Sleuths. We are heartbroken for the family. It is hard for them to come together to try and give Dylan a decent burial. But, you know, I think people are expecting a lot from Elaine. And, again, I'm really trying not to take sides here. I'm just trying to put myself into the other person's shoes for a moment. She really believes that Mark did something. She has said that. And then she was accused of doing something to her son. Now it's proven that she didn't do anything, and her son is dead. Can you understand why she wouldn't want the person she believes, right or wrong, that was responsible for his death, why she doesn't want to talk to him?
I agree. I wouldn't want to talk to him either, but I would try to get up some kind of... This is Kathy. I mean, Rain.
Rain, okay. Sorry, I'm talking to Teresa. I'm sorry. Teresa, I want Teresa to answer this, okay, Rain? Teresa,
okay.
What do you think?
I can understand her not wanting to speak to him,
mm-hmm.
but through the whole course of the thing, my opinion is they should have pulled together to try to find him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would have been nice. It's hard to...
I feel like any parents, no matter what the circumstances are, should pull together to try to find a missing child.
Mm-hmm.
I may be wrong about that, but that's just my opinion.
Okay, Rain, I'm sorry. I just wanted to hear Teresa, and then the voices are confusing me. I swear you guys sound so much alike. I love it. But, Rain, what do you think? Expound on what you were saying.
If it was me, yes, I would be furious.
Mm-hmm.
But I would try to hold some composure just for the fact to give some dignity to my son.
I guess I'm saying, can we all understand?
I can understand. I can understand where Lane's coming from. And I can understand, you know, in a way where Mark's coming from. But to me, it's just not helping the situation. I mean, Elaine is furious. Her baby's dead. I see that. She thinks Mark done something to him. Mark did accuse her, like you said. And, I mean, I would be furious. She wants to find out who hurt her child, who killed her child. And she's going to do everything in her power as a mother to find out. But I don't think if she is doing the things that I've been told by Mark is the right thing to do, I think the best thing for her to do instead of, you know, accusing and accusing and accusing is try to find a way to find out if he really did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there should be other avenues you could do. Private detectives, keep banging on the law enforcement doors, look for clues, something, instead of just, but she's going to have to get her emotions out. She needs to get her emotions out. She's going to have to grieve.
Right.
And I would probably do the same. If it was my ex-husband, I probably would have already done something I shouldn't have done.
Right. Michael in Minnesota, you've been sitting quietly and patiently. I want to hear your thoughts, please.
I'm just heartsick. I'm one of the people that's not ready to convict Mark Redwine, truthfully.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the Dr. Drew show was a complete ambush. Why he stayed, I would have been out of there that quick if they had treated me with the disrespect and the attack. Just that he stayed, I thought spoke volumes. And I didn't think he came off likable. And so I can understand why people are ready to, you know, make all sorts of assumptions about him. But I'm not one of those people, and he lost a son, too. I hope he had nothing to do with it. Obviously, I can't know. I know Elaine had nothing to do with it. I know Corey had nothing to do with it. My heart breaks for everyone, until it's resolved and there's proof. It's really a shame, but, you know, we don't know what happened in their divorce. We can't possibly interject. They need to come together. We don't know what went on between them. There are people that I couldn't sit down in a room with, no matter what the common ground was that would bring us together. So, I without knowing details of their divorce, which is none of anyone's business, we just really can't even begin to talk about what they should and shouldn't do, in my opinion. I don't know.
You know, it's just it would be nice if we could see them come together, but again, I certainly understand Elaine's emotions about this.
I sure do, too.
Teresa?
Yes,
has Mark told you how his other children are doing with this news? Obviously, they're devastated. Has he talked about them at all?
We haven't really been able to talk a whole lot about that yet. I asked him had he contacted any of his other family. His phone was blowing up. My phone was blowing up. We really didn't get to talk a whole lot yet, but I plan on talking to him after I'm done talking with you. So I will find out more.
Okay. Thank you. And would you please pass along? I'm deeply sorry. I did text him. And again, I wanted to make sure on this show tonight, this is not in any way, shape, or form on an attack on Mark Redwine. We just want to find out the truth. And that's why, again, I'm going to keep saying it. I am so grateful you're with us, Teresa, because you can shed a light on him that he can't put on himself. So you can let us know about him. Now, you said that Dylan was his life. Was Dylan his youngest child?
Yes, he had four children. He has four children.
Got it. Okay.
Corey is older? I didn't know Corey was older.
Corey is his oldest child with his marriage to Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Corey is like maybe 21.
Well, I was thinking he was legal age. Right. So Dylan was his baby, and let's face it, the baby of the family. You know, you can understand how he would focus on him. He did say, Teresa, that night it was, he picked him up and, you know, things were a little tense because he was being a teenager and, you know, not wanting to do what Dad wanted to do and on and on and on. When you first heard that Dylan was missing, I'm assuming Mark called and told you. Did
no,
you
ma'am.
First, oh, how did you find out?
Actually, a friend of mine in Denver called me. She called mm-hmm. me and she said, Mark's son is missing. And I said, who, Corey? She said, no, Dylan. And I was speechless. And my computer was down at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I could get to a computer, I went online and I immediately started following it. And he had already been missing for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, 2 days later, his sister that lives here that I'm friends with called me. And she said, I just got off the phone with Mark. He really needs to talk to you. And I mm-hmm. said, okay. And I called him. And that's when I talked to him. I didn't even know Dylan was gone until 2 weeks after the fact.
It was kept pretty quiet because that was one of the problems with the whole situation is it wasn't an immediate alert. You know, it wasn't, my God, we have to find this child. And I'm going to get on my soapbox here for just a moment. That is what drives me crazy about the Amber Alert or any alert. Even if a child is a runaway, they're still in danger. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean they're not in any less danger. Yeah, if a stranger grabs them and they take off, absolutely, that's the most horrid, dangerous possible scenario. But a kid on the street is still in extreme danger, and we need to treat it as such. And it was just, I'm not trying to blame law enforcement. I don't know exactly what happened. It depends on who you talk to. But I didn't hear about Dylan's disappearance for a long time. It was somebody at Web Sleuths who brought it up, who brought the thread up and started a thread about him. I had no idea, heard nothing about it. Teresa, you've known Mark for 5 years. Do you think...
My opinion on the alert, I don't care
yeah.
who the child is. I don't care what the circumstances are. If a child is gone and it has to be reported to law enforcement, it doesn't necessarily have to be an Amber Alert, but
right.
some type of alert needs to go out.
We had a situation.
Because a child
right.
doesn't meet the criteria for an Amber Alert, still some type of local alert needs to
exactly.
be put out.
Exactly. That's all that needs to be done. Exactly. Can you hold on just one moment? I think we have Cheryl McCollum with us. Hold on 1 second. Hi, Cheryl. Hold on. She's almost
hey.
Here. Cheryl, are you with us, Cheryl?
Absolutely.
I don't know how long. Have you been holding? Have you been listening to our conversation, I hope, for a little bit?
I have for a little bit.
Okay. You probably heard that Dylan Redwine, 14-year-old son of Mark and Elaine Redwine, he was visiting with
right.
his father over Thanksgiving 2012. It was a little bit before Thanksgiving, I believe. And Dad picked him up at the airport, brought him home, and got up the next morning, went to work, came home. He wasn't there. He thought he was just with his friends, didn't worry. Later, he reported him missing, as did his mom, Elaine, and his partial remains were found today. With us, we have Teresa, who is a very close friend of Mark Redwine. Mark has been on this show and faced the tough questions. We've got to give him credit for that. Also with us, we have Rain. She is the official booker for the show. She helps me line up the guests. And Michael in Minnesota, who comes up with all the good questions that after the show, I think, damn, I wish I'd have thought of that. So, Cheryl, do you have anything to offer? We'll be getting into George Zimmerman here in just a little bit, but do you have anything to say about this, a little bit
well,
that you do know?
I did find it interesting when they were talking about the wildlife, and I will tell you, a lot of times that is what is going to disturb your scene, and
mm-hmm.
it will move your evidence. It will move, you know, the victim and parts of the victim. Bones will have evidence on them, like scratches or teeth marks. So, again, with the fecal matter, they're going to be able to identify those animals. But they will also, hopefully, depending on what all they have at the scene, will be able to show whether or not this was an animal attack or if this was a homicide.
Well, they have come out, right, they've come out and said, law enforcement has said this is not an accident, this is not an animal attack. Yeah.
They have something else.
They have something.
They have something. Either they found some clothing, they found something where he looked like he was bound, they've got something else if they were able to determine that from a clavicle and a femur. Come on.
Cheryl, everybody, Cheryl McCollum is a professor at the Investigative Cold Case Research Institute. She is also seen many times on HLN and all of the cable talk shows talking about true crime. This woman knows her stuff, and I want to ask you, Cheryl McCollum, this question. Mark, if the police suspect Mark, they've said they have no suspects and they've said the parents are cooperating. If the police suspect Mark, they've got the remains. Could they have something that they feel is absolute proof that Mark is guilty, but they feel it won't hold up in court? Is that a possibility that they're just holding back and looking for more? I guess they do that a lot, I would assume. But people are saying, why wasn't Mark arrested? Well, the police obviously didn't have enough evidence, but I don't know how that whole scenario works out. Can you kind of lay it out for us how it might go down?
Absolutely. Let's say for argument's sake, because we have some remains once with a case where the hands had been bound and the rope was still there on the skeletal remains. We knew that. That's an indication that there's a homicide, but we didn't know who put the rope there. So just because you have evidence of a homicide still does not mean that you can pinpoint who.
Mm-hmm.
And with something that's been in the weather that long, touch DNA is not going to be available. Again, there's no eyewitness here. The only things that now you have are things that are circumstantial that because of that become very suspect. You've got good friends that he wants to talk to now, but he didn't call for 2 weeks. And he didn't even call them. He's waiting for them to call him.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really unusual. If your child is missing, even for 30 seconds at Walmart, you start asking strangers to help you look, much less the people that you know when this goes on 2 days, 4 days, 12 days, 14 days. That's a long time to not reach out to people yourself.
Well, no, wait. Back up.
Are
you saying that
Cheryl McCollum.
Isn't she wonderful? Are you saying that Mark Redwine did not talk to Dylan's friends for 2 weeks? I've missed that.
The lady that I heard talking said that he didn't call her, that she didn't even know the child was missing for 2 weeks.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh,
Teresa.
I see. You're talking about his friends. Teresa, what do you think? What
Teresa,
do you say to that?
Can I clarify that?
Yes, please.
Because I had gone to a different phone company, and Mark did not have my new phone number. That's why his sister called me.
Okay.
I get that, but I'm just saying it seems, again, the sister would have found you sooner. That they would be so desperate, we need everybody, you know, to post this, blog this. I'm saying things like that become suspect, even if they're not. But, again, it's just like when somebody's child goes missing and they're not the one that calls 911.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always, that's a flag. The fact that he's going to go to work, oh, I assumed he was with friends, I wasn't worried. But he just came to visit you, and it's over a holiday. And we all know that family violence goes up over the holidays. So, again, these are going to be flags whether they pan out or not.
And Teresa, let me just tell you what Cheryl is doing. She's not accusing Mark. She's just talking in general terms. These are the flags.
Absolutely.
That's, she's believing. She is the last person.
I heard 7 minutes of what y'all were saying. Oh, the last person.
Yeah,
but
she would be.
What kind of things are they going to run down? I'm just telling you what's going to be said in the war room.
Exactly,
and
that's what they're going to look at.
I can understand that. And I'll tell you the reason Mark did want to get in touch with me is because when the FBI became involved, he gave them a list of people, of his friends that he knew that they could get in touch with as to how he interacted with Dylan, and my name was on that list, and that's why he got he was trying to get in touch with me. And he couldn't get through to my phone number, and he contacted his sister to contact me.
Right.
That's how, because we hadn't talked for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got back in contact with him again.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, I just wanted to clarify that. Cheryl's the first person to stand up and say, wait a minute, don't accuse anybody. So that's
right.
That's where Cheryl's coming from. But that paints a better picture, Cheryl, because now standing back and looking at this through law enforcement's eyes, if they look at those types of actions as red flags, whether they, like you said, pan out or not, you can understand why they might be looking at Mark Redwine, although they say they're not.
Mm-hmm. But of course they are. Everybody's a suspect until we know otherwise. So
right.
Again, this is a man that just gave the Federal Bureau of Investigation a list of people that could testify about his relationship with his son, but she just said, but we hadn't talked for a while. Well,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means, 6 months, 2 years, I don't know the time frame, but what transpired during the time they weren't communicating, where he didn't even have her new number.
Mm-hmm.
And people all the time, sadly, shock us. Holly Hughes and I say all the time, you know, people like to say the devil's in the details. I like to say the devil's at the dinner table. They are people that you hang out with, that you sleep with, that you marry,
mm-hmm.
that you, you know, hang out with socially and or are related to. You know, brother-in-laws shock people. Look at the family of the Green River Killer.
Well,
never saw it coming.
Never.
Okay.
And look what he did. Exactly. Oh, my God.
That's right. The friends of the fellas that committed the bombing in Massachusetts never
mm-hmm.
saw it coming.
That's
people
right.
People shock you
BTK.
All the time.
Yeah.
BTK,
so,
perfect.
Oh, honey, we can do this all night. Everyone.
Right.
Okay, and that's my point, that, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer fooled people. Ted Bundy fooled people. Trained people. So, again, you don't know who you're dealing with. And sometimes we have friends and we have family members that we love and care about very much that shock the hell out of us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something law enforcement knows. So even though they have a good friend saying, no, he would never, you don't know that. And
mm-hmm.
until law enforcement is satisfied that he couldn't, then he's on their list.
Right, okay.
Well, and I believe what she's saying is the truth, as being brought up around law enforcement and having a person that I grew up with who works high up in forensics in Florida, I know this to be true.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I'm so sorry for all of you. And my job on Chris's show is to tell you the truth.
Yes.
I don't have any political reason not to. I don't have enough power not to. There's nobody I'm trying to save or hurt. I'm just telling you, this is how the real world operates. And again, until I can rule you out, I'm looking at you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Rain, we haven't heard from you for a little bit. What are your thoughts, my dear? Rain, is she not there? Did she leave us? Rain. Okay, Teresa, are you still with us, I hope?
Yes, I'm still
okay.
Here, Tricia.
Good. Okay. You've been on the show with us now for almost an hour, and I want to thank you. We're going to get to George Zimmerman here in just a minute, but there are just a few more things I want to talk about. Do you know what is next? They're trying to plan the memorial. What is next in Mark Redwine's world? Do you have any idea what he's going to be doing here?
Well, I really don't know. I know he wants to have a memorial in Bayfield. That way all of Dylan's friends and everyone who helped search for him and everyone who has been in touch with all of us can all be there to honor Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know that he does have some family coming
mm-hmm.
into town. So.
Well, so there is a possibility then we can see this happening where there would be perhaps two memorials, and maybe that's just the way it's going to have to be to help keep the peace. So
exactly. It may be that way, because I know he said that Elaine may have one in Monument, but he also wants to hold one in Bayfield. Therefore, Dylan's friends and all there can attend.
That would be wonderful. I think that would be very, very moving and something that would help people on Mark's side of the family and Dylan's friends as well. So it's very tragic that there is this this problem between the two, but it's the reality of the situation, and hopefully they'll be able to get through it. In closing, Teresa, what would you like to us to know about Mark Redwine, and what would you like to say to us? There's a lot of people listening who think Mark is guilty. Just letting you know.
Well, I feel like, you know, we live in a place where you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, okay? Wait until they, if Mark did this, wait until they prove him guilty. There is mm-hmm. so many people out there right now on other websites that want to take matters into their own hands. And then they're going to turn around and be in the same position mm-hmm. and doing the same thing that they're accusing him of doing. That is not a good thing.
It's not. And if I could just kind of go on top of that and say that people like that, people who are that ridiculous and that downright dangerous, it gives everybody on the internet a bad name. I fight this all the time with web sleuths. People think, oh my God, it's the crazy internet people. It's the crazy people with the crazy website saying that they're going to stalk somebody or hurt somebody. And no, we don't do that at web sleuths. We fight against that type of behavior. And you're right. It has brought out people who are just acting crazy. And that's not good for anybody. But give us your final thoughts on Mark Redwine, please.
I feel like that people should let him grieve as a parent and let it get done and over with and let him mourn for his child because he is a hurting parent.
You could hear it in his voice, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. Yes, he called me. I was the first person he called from the sheriff's office today, and mm-hmm. he was crying. The words out of his mouth was, Teresa, and then he started crying, and he said, Dylan is dead, and I lost
God.
It. I dropped everything in my hands, and I fell on my couch. The man was crying. To me, that doesn't sound like somebody who hurt their child, but like the other person just said, you really don't know somebody. You don't know what they are capable of, but mm-hmm. in my heart, until Mark comes right out and tells me himself he did it, I just can't believe he did it, but, you know, it's like she said, but anyway.
Well, Teresa, this has been a very hard night for you, and again, from my heart, thank you so much. It is a great pleasure to have you on and to help us clear up some misconceptions about Mark. I think that's the fair thing to do, is to get the other side of the story. Teresa, I want you to know, when we talk about Dylan, you're welcome to come on as well. Perhaps you and Mark can come on together. That would be wonderful.
Thank you very much, Tricia. I appreciate
Thank
that.
You. And please pass along our deepest condolences to Mark and to the rest of Dylan's family, okay?
I sure will. I definitely will. And thank you so much for having me on, Tricia.
Thank you, Teresa. Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, boy, that was a tough one, Cheryl. That was a tough one. It's been
a
tough day.
Right.
It is. It All was, right. you know, Mark Redwine was convinced that his former wife, Elaine, had kidnapped Dylan and was hiding him, and I was praying that was the case because that would mean he was alive. But talking to Elaine, her her grief was so intense and so real, immediately you knew she had nothing to do with it. It was just so easy to tell. And now Mark Redwine is trying to get with Elaine to plan a memorial. Well, here he's been accusing her of kidnapping their son. Now they know he's dead. So you have that on top of the fact that Elaine feels that he is absolutely 100% guilty. I don't see them coming together. And I understand I understand her feelings. I do. I get it. If I thought my former husband had done something to my son and then had the gall to accuse me of doing it, you're right. I wouldn't want anything to do with him. I would be so angry. Oh, my God. I would be uncontrollable. So Anyway, oh my gosh, what a day. Cheryl, how did it go tonight on After Dark on HLN?
My students had the time of their life. It was awesome. We had Holly Hughes and, of course, Vinny Politan and Ryan. It was just remarkable, and they just had a wonderful time. It was you know, interesting. Their format is so different, but it's just great to have this group of civilians, if you will, that are, you know, acting as this jury, because you really get a sense of where people are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, overwhelmingly, everybody saw the star witness the same way. She's a liar. She's a freaking train wreck.
We're talking about the George Zimmerman case and the witness that was on the stand yesterday and today. And train wreck doesn't begin to describe her testimony. But continue, please. This was supposedly Trayvon's best friend, the one that he was talking to when the confrontation started with George Zimmerman, leading to the death of Trayvon Martin. Okay, Cheryl McCollum, please continue. You were talking about your students were on the news program HLN's After Dark tonight, and they had a blast, and they said that the witness, the star witness, was what again?
I mean, just a train wreck. I mean, she was, I called her laughable, because she is so condescending. She is so just, she's got an attitude about everything and everybody. She says basically to the defense attorney, well, you read it. You know, aren't you listening to me? And then she says to the prosecutor, you know, that ball-headed guy right there. Seriously?
I didn't hear that. I missed that.
Oh, yeah, honey. And I'm like, okay, you know, you're trying to have this persona that y'all aren't going to get me. Why are you worried somebody's going to get you? If you're telling the truth,
right?
You're the one that has interjected a racial slur in this whole thing. You're the one that's already admitted to lying about your name, your age, asking your mother to lie for you. You lied about, you know, whether or not you thought cracker was a racial slur. You said you didn't think it was. You quasi-lied about your relationship with Trayvon because everybody thought you were the girlfriend. That's not true either. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. You've got not one, but two aliases.
She's only 19, you know?
Yeah, but again, why do you lie about being younger? Because you're covering something up. Why do you have an alias? Because you're covering something up.
Right.
Okay. The other thing that she said that I thought was really interesting, she kept saying, Trayvon was out of breath. Trayvon was out of breath. Okay, and again, Tricia, for you, I walked the scene. From the time he started to run and where the confrontation took place, 70 yards. You're telling me a 17-year-old young man, high school football player, is out of breath running 70 yards.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
He's out of breath because he doubled back to confront Mr. Zimmerman.
And do you think
he
that was apparent?
Said, I think it was more than clear.
Okay.
She also said that Trayvon said, I'm not running anymore. That sounds like, hey, I'm not running anymore because I'm about to handle
kick
this
your ass.
Business.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She also said that Trayvon said, cracker. Okay, here's where I start to say she's telling some things that are true and some things that are not, like Dr. Glass mentioned. I believe Trayvon said cracker. I don't believe he said creepy cracker.
Right.
I do not believe there's a 17-year-old boy, white, black, Hispanic, Pan-Asian, or Native American, that's going to tell a girl, basically, I'm afraid of another guy.
Of another old white guy, right.
Right. But George Zimmerman was much smaller then. Trayvon Martin was 6 feet tall. And Trayvon Martin had jumped and bucked up on an adult before. This was not something he hasn't done. Now, we know the jury doesn't know that, but we know it. So I'm mentioning it because the witness today knew it.
Right.
He knows his background. So when Trayvon says, hey, this dude's following me, I'm going to double back. I'm going to ambush him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
When the phone goes dead, she claims she tries to call back twice. She doesn't call the police. Why not?
Why? Right.
Because she knew Trayvon could handle himself. Trayvon never felt the need to call the police or his father
mm-hmm.
or the young man at home, the would-have-been stepbrother, I guess. He doesn't call anybody. He stays on the phone with her.
Mm-hmm. Because he's getting ready. It sounds like it. Apparently he's getting ready to go over and do something that he has done, and he does very well, and that's try and beat the crap out of somebody.
And this is where the timeline becomes so important.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes so important. You're talking about less than 2 minutes. Less than 2 minutes. George
mm-hmm.
Zimmerman calls 911 at 7:09. He does not hang up till 7:13 and 46 seconds.
Okay.
Dee Dee, the first alias she used, doesn't hang up from Trayvon till about 7:14 and some change.
Mm-hmm.
The first 911 call that comes in, you can already hear the screams, is at 7:16, which means they were already engaged in a confrontation that would get the attention of somebody to call 911.
Right.
So from that screaming, let's back up even 30 seconds, less than a minute and a half. Now,
okay.
Here's where it gets a little bizarre. George is in his truck, and you can hear him say, he just took off running.
Mm-hmm.
And the 911 operator says, what direction? Immediately, you can hear ding, ding, ding. That's when he opens the truck door.
The car door, right.
Keys are in the ignition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get out of the car until the 911 operator says, which way did he go? Well, I can't drive any further. I got to get out to go down the walkway to see which way.
Right.
That's when the 911 operator says, are you following him? And George says, yes. And the 911 operator says, we don't need you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And George says, okay. Now, from the moment that happens, by a stopwatch, Trayvon has 4 minutes from the time George gets out of his truck to when the confrontations occurred.
Mm-hmm.
You can't walk 45 seconds in 4 minutes.
Right.
There's no way in hell George Zimmerman could have caught him on foot. Number one, he had a lead of 30 yards and took off running while George
mm-hmm.
is still in the car.
So you're
Why
saying that Trayvon...
Why didn't he get home?
Right. Trayvon, it appears that he turned around.
He had
4 minutes, Trisha,
right.
to go less than 70 yards. You can walk that in 45 seconds.
Right.
Not only did he not go home, what's he doing for the other 3 minutes and 20 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
Walk for 3 minutes and 20 seconds. You'll be stunned how far you get.
I was going to say, you get pretty darn far
in
that time.
It's damn straight further than a football field.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, absolutely.
When I walked it, from the time George started the 911 call, when he sees Trayvon at Frank Taffy's house, to the minute he hangs up, for 4.5 minutes, you can walk nearly, 3/10 of a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this child running, I'm not talking about walking, I walked it, running at 17 years old, a high school football player, he should have been home nine different ways.
Yeah. A whole bunch of times he should have been home. Right, exactly.
He wasn't trying to go home.
Do you think that the jury is actually getting this picture? With this witness today, I think it was very difficult to... but thank you, Michael. That was the best comment I've heard on the trial, Michael. That was perfect.
that was
it.
I'm going to tell you right now, the jury was done with her yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Today was painful for them. They were done. They already know exactly what she's about. She's saying words because of what she heard and saw on the news. She
mm-hmm.
wouldn't have said wet grass. You would have said the clothing was wet. You wouldn't have mentioned grass, except they
right.
did. And they only said that as it relates to George Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
So she's clearly framing her testimony to benefit the fact that George attacked Trayvon. She even said, yeah, I heard him hit Trayvon. There's no mm-hmm. way she can testify to that. And then, of course, she had to say, okay, I don't know that. Well,
right.
Okay. What did she know? This is their star witness. She
it's pretty pathetic.
She proved nothing except for Trayvon used a racial slur. Trayvon refused to keep running. That Trayvon, had some exchange with Mr. Zimmerman. And the first thing she said, George Zimmerman said, was, what are you talking about? That
mm-hmm.
doesn't sound like somebody that's confronting anybody.
Right.
And then she changed that. Okay.
And that was
but
she.
I'll tell you some other things that I heard today.
Okay.
Some other things, because I know you've got limited time.
Oh, I got lots of time left, so go for it.
Oh, okay. The lady with the dark, straight hair.
Yeah.
Who's a real estate agent who lived in the corner.
Loved her, Mrs. Lowry.
She was,
loved her, too. But let me tell you how she helped the defense. When the prosecution asked, this street right here, what is it? She said, I don't know the name of it. Okay, let's back up a second. When George Zimmerman says, I don't know the address, I don't know the street, everybody loses their mind, says he's a liar, said he's making it up, that he was really following Trayvon, he wasn't looking for an address. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This lady's on the Homeowners Association, and she's a real estate agent, and she owned the house. George was just renting, and she doesn't know the address either. She also said, very clearly, in the dark, you would not be able to see my address from the street,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what George said.
Right.
Now, again, these are your witnesses, sir, and each one, as in some way, supported exactly what George said.
That's
so
how I
first,
felt. I was
exactly
Trish
how
asked
I
me
felt.
If, well, I was telling Trish, I'm still waiting for the aha moment of this prosecution. So far, there hasn't been a single one, or have I missed
right.
a show?
You have not missed a thing. Because think about their witnesses, y'all. You have one eyewitness that says, I saw two people standing. You have a second eyewitness from the prosecution that said, I saw one person on the ground and one person standing. You have another eyewitness that says, no, both people were on the ground, rolling around, arms flailing. The prosecution has just interjected a reasonable doubt of even what their own witnesses saw.
Mother of God. I know, it's getting bad, and it's already
Trisha,
bad, it's
walking.
Getting worse.
When you have a minute.
He's walking, if this keeps up.
Michael from
he's
Minnesota
walking.
Has a question for
Michael
Cheryl
from
McCollum.
Minnesota has a
yes.
question for Cheryl. Cheryl, what did you make of the way the prosecution was able to bring in the ridiculous accusations or charges against George with Mrs. Lauer, just because she said the defense had asked of her, did you ever witness George with a temper? No. Did you ever see him lose, his mind? Were you worried or concerned about him being in the position as head of the neighborhood watch? No. I mean, she obviously felt fine about George. And then they used that to bring in the domestic violence, which was dropped, and then also
right.
the attacking of a police officer, which was also deemed a misdemeanor, and he finished the class, and that was dropped. I just thought that seemed so backhanded. Can you talk about that with me?
It is backhanded, but here's the thing that I think is more critical. When you're listening to some of this testimony, you forget whose witness is this?
Mm-hmm.
It
right.
should be so clear, Michael, that this is the state's case against George. You had a charge that was dropped. Okay? Doesn't that mean he didn't do it? How else do I translate that?
Mm-hmm.
You have people saying, no, he had no temper. No, I've never heard a racial slur. No, he wasn't a wannabe. I found him to be meek. I found him to be very agreeable. He wanted to do it. He was a good neighbor. These are the, keep in mind, these are the prosecution witnesses. The defense has some too.
And their people are going to say what? George was a good person. He was a good neighbor. George is a good person. He's a good neighbor. Well, that's all their people are saying.
Right.
I have not heard one shred of evidence that proves this was not self-defense. Not one. Not one thing. The police, in their own written statements, visible injury, the evidence supports his story. He passed the polygraph. They couldn't do nothing with him for 44 days. Not one, but two chiefs of police couldn't figure out what to do with him. Because if you charge too soon, you're going to lose it. And again, where was George going? He's not going anywhere, so you certainly don't have to be in any hurry. But when you say to me, as a 911 operator, even though I'm not technically on patrol right now as a neighborhood watch, I'm still a neighborhood watch. I still know to call. I know to call the non-emergency number. I'm telling you, this guy doesn't look right. You ask me which way did he go, I get out of the car to look.
Right.
You ask me for an address, I turn around and walk the other way looking for an address. You ask me repeatedly, where are you? And I say, well, I'm between the two houses. It goes on and on. Here's what it reminds me of. It reminds me a lot of what the defense did as it relates to Rodney King in the civil rights case. When you first saw the videotape of the officer literally beating Mr. King, there was no one, no one that saw that tape and went, oh, yeah, that was protocol. That was good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right.
By the time their expert got done with the videotape, he systematically went frame by frame by frame. Every single time that Mr. King was struck with an assaton, correctly, I might add, never on the elbow, never on the head, in the parts where he was supposed to be hit, he moved. And each time that expert said he didn't comply, they said, lay down and be still. He never complied. Put your hands behind your back. He failed to comply. In every second, millisecond of that frame they went through, they're going to do the same thing with the 911 tape. Every time George changed positions is because that 911 operator asked him a question.
Well, now, I understand what you're saying, and it sounds really good. But don't you think that there is, I mean, you do think there's a possibility that he's not going to walk. They may find him guilty. We don't know what the jury is thinking.
Oh, well, I mean, that, let's face it, Tricia, that's why we all love this business. I mean, this is a made-for-TV movie literally unfolding in front of us, and we get to somehow be a little bit of a part of it. But again, my point is, if this jury is not jury nullification, if they are literally going by the letter of the law, what law did George Zimmerman break that they can prove?
Right.
Getting out of your car is not illegal. Following somebody in your neighborhood that doesn't belong there, not illegal. Some people might even argue more of us need to be doing it. Questioning, why are you here? Can I help you? See? So what law did he break and when? We hadn't heard it yet. And they're running out of witnesses. I told you yesterday I thought they had three more good ones. Who else can they call?
That I don't know.
We
were just going to say, Mike and I want to know, what are they? Who are they going to call?
I told y'all they had three more. They're going to call what? Another person that didn't see or hear anything? Well, thank you for stopping by.
Hey, everybody, we have a special treat. We have Levi Page on the show. Levi, thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, Keith. Well done. I watched you and Holly on After Dark tonight. I think you both did a great job.
Thank you.
Levi, I miss talking to you, buddy.
Are you underneath the ocean by chance in the channel that goes from Paris to England? Because you kind of sound like it. What are you calling on?
No, I'm on my cell phone.
You are? Okay. Okay, now you sound better. You took the marbles out of your mouth, and now you sound much better. So anyway, Levi Page, your thoughts. I'm dying to hear what you have to say about the
I was watching some of the commentary today.
regarding Rachel Gentile's testimony, and I thought that it was a little ignorant because a lot of the commentators who presumably went to law school and were attorneys were talking about how rude the defense attorney was to Rachel Gentile and how tough he was on her. And I'm thinking, how many trials have you watched? I mean, we just got done watching the Jodi Arias trial where Juan Martinez ripped apart almost every witness that testified in cross-examination. And 2 years ago, we watched the Casey Anthony trial where Jose Baez had Casey Anthony's father, George Anthony, on the stand and was completely tearing him apart and making him cry on the stand. And this attorney, I watched the cross-examination. He spoke in a very calm voice. And
respectful, even.
Yeah, I didn't see anything rude about it at all.
I didn't
and I
either,
thought that he went very easy on her, considering the fact that she, you know, uses three names, that she, you know, has changed her story so much, that she called him retarded at one point during the cross-examination. Did you see that?
What did she call him, retarded?
Yeah, she asked him a question.
She did.
And she said that question is retarded.
Oh, my gosh. Good Lord. Oh, brother.
I don't think
now,
that's a word she should be throwing around. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, let me just tell everybody what's going on here. We have the wonderful, awesome Cheryl McCollum, who, along with her students tonight from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, were guests on HLN's After Dark, and they had a blast. Also with us, Michael in Minnesota, a wonderful listener who calls up and gives out the good questions, the ones I never think of, and Levi Page. We all know Levi from his blog, and we're all pushing for Levi to get his own show on HLN. Levi is my crime time good buddy. So we're talking about the George Zimmerman case. I'm going to take the side a little bit here of the prosecution because it seems we're going lopsided. I know that's where the evidence leads us, but I'm going with the prosecution. Cheryl, don't you think, no matter all of this stuff that we've just talked about, all these witnesses that the defense is turning and how poorly they're being perceived and blah, 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 can't the prosecution get up there and say, let's look at this? You have a minor, you have an adult. Who has the gun? Who has the power? Who has the ability to do the most harm? That would be George Zimmerman. He held all the power in his hand with that gun. Isn't that enough for manslaughter?
Well, here's the answer. I'll tell you something I did.
Okay.
I took the photograph of Trayvon inside the 7-Eleven, and I showed it to every single class that I had for a solid week. And I asked them to describe both people in the photograph. As it relates to Trayvon, there were words like thug, early 20s, criminal. There was nothing positive that they said about him. They all thought he was older. Not one person thought it was Trayvon Martin.
Really?
Big. Not one. And when I told them who it was, they were taken aback. So, again, your perception when you see someone 6 feet tall standing in your friend's driveway wearing a hoodie, not facing you, not moving, staring at the house, okay?
Right.
With his hand in his waistband, at that point, I'm going to assume he's got a weapon. I'm not going to assume he's touching a cell phone in his waistband. And again, he's dressed the part. The sagging pants, the hoodie, it's dark, it's raining. You're not in a hurry to get out of the rain, and he was not under shelter at this point. So that's when George first sees him. He drives past him and parks, you know, at the clubhouse. Trayvon chooses to walk straight up toward the clubhouse. He could have run to the right or gone to the right. He didn't. He went toward George. That doesn't make him the aggressor, but it certainly looks suspect. next to George. This dude is coming to check me out. That's
mm-hmm.
what he tells the 911 operator. This dude is coming to check me out.
Right.
That's pretty much what Dee Dee's telling us. And the thing is, he's what, 6 months away from being somebody that could join the Marine Corps? We have to stop acting like he was 12.
Right.
The picture they put out was a lie. And
it
yes,
was.
George had a gun, but George even says in his statement, whether it's true or not, he even forgot he had it on, which
mm-hmm.
is irresponsible, but he said he did. And when he was reaching for his cell phone is when he realized, oh, wait. Okay, so here's the thing. He doesn't know who Trayvon is. He doesn't know whether or not he's got a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And of all the other hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times he supposedly called 911, all the other nights he supposedly was on patrol, he never engaged a weapon. He never engaged in a scuffle. He never had any type of derogatory comments to say to another person.
Mm-hmm.
And of the 98 phone calls we know he made, again, they pull out five. They're not wanting to tell you the truth.
Got it.
The truth is he called more about dogs than he did black males. The
mm-hmm.
truth is he called more about kids screaming and carrying on at the pool after hours than he did about black males. They don't want you to know that. And
now,
the
Cheryl,
only
will
reason...
The defense bring out
Stop. Okay, because I have this new device. I will sneak through your monitor and smack you. If you guys talk over each other, I can do that. It's magic. Okay. Let's go to Levi Page first, and then we'll go to Michael in Minnesota. Levi Page, go first, please, my dear.
Well, you know, when this case first started out, I was so outraged, and I thought that George Zimmerman was a racist, a vigilante. But then when more evidence started to come out, the more I became open-minded. And I don't think that he is innocent. I'm waiting to hear both sides of the case
mm-hmm.
lay out their case in court in a trial. That's what a trial is for, to get to the bottom of what happened, to see if the state can prove their case. So I'm glad that this case has gone to trial so that the public that made judgments very early on can see if their preconceived notions were true or not. But one thing that I wanted to point out was, and I read about this, and I don't think that this is talked about enough in the media, is people want to paint George Zimmerman as racist, but there was a son of a police officer who was accused of beating a black homeless man.
Mm-hmm.
And George Zimmerman was an advocate that the perpetrator was not treated harshly enough, and there was a cover-up with the police department, and
really?
The police officer's son was given preferential treatment. And to me, that does not sound like someone who's racist, that has an axe to grind against black people
mm-hmm.
in his neighborhood or anywhere. And you know what George Zimmerman sort of reminds me of? You know, I remember whenever I was following the Haley Cummings case, I have
mm-hmm.
been in contact with some locals there in the community, and there's busybodies in every
yes.
single community. And there was
one
yes. woman that I came in contact with who was a corrections officer. She had always wanted to be a police officer, and
mm-hmm.
she was a busybody in the neighborhood, and I liked her. I found her endearing, but she was a busybody, and she wanted to be a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what George Zimmerman was. And you know what? That's not illegal. We may not like that George Zimmerman followed Trayvon Martin. We may not like that he was walking around carrying a gun, but
mm-hmm.
he had a permit for it. There's nothing we can do about that unless, you know, we
right.
want to change the laws. And really, you know, I think that
something?
He's not been given a fair shot in the media.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Can I interject one thing?
Yes.
With all the witnesses that the prosecution has put up so far, where's the proof he followed him?
Well, the 911
exactly.
operator told him not to, and he continued. And listen, it doesn't matter
but
whether he did
no
or not. It's not illegal
that.
To follow someone.
That's right, but there's no proof of that. The 911 operator said, we don't need you to do that. That was for George's protection.
Mm-hmm.
And George said, okay, where's the proof he followed him? There is none. There's none.
Let's go to Michael in Minnesota. Michael, what do you have to say, my darling?
Well, this goes back to the conversation earlier about the tapes that they played of the 911 were every single one. The five that they played were a black man, a black man, mm-hmm. a black man. Will the defense counter with some of the others? It was a dog. It's a dog. It's the neighbor's dog. I mean, is that what we're expecting from the defense?
I don't know. Honestly, if the prosecution continues as poorly as they are, George will not have to testify. They're going to have to put up very little. They have not proven their case.
Not
see,
at all.
We,
yeah.
we all are in this habit of we are repeating things we've heard people say. Well, George mm-hmm. got out of the truck. He was asked, where is he?
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
he followed him. He was asked, what address are you at? Mm-hmm. Even the person that lived in that house said, you could not see my number from the street.
Mm-hmm.
He had to get out and walk to find that. I have personally walked the scene. There are no street signs. It is weird. There's no road mark. There's nothing that tells you the name of these streets.
And there's no lighting in that back area, correct?
No. And at 7 o'clock in the rain, he couldn't have seen that unless he walked right up to it. He's
mm-hmm.
having to use a flashlight himself. And he's asked repeatedly, where are you? What's the address? I got to have a number. I got to have a street number. And George says, well, give me a minute. He's
mm-hmm.
walking to get the answer he's being asked. If he was told, go back to your car and get in it, he would have done that. He wasn't told that. And I want to say again, a 911 operator cannot tell you what to do. They have no arrest power, no authority.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
None.
True. And but people, when they're talking to a 911 operator, usually do what they're told. You know, I remember
course,
one time.
Because there's
yeah.
an emergency.
Exactly.
Of
we
course.
Had a down power line in front of my house, and I'm calling 911, and I said, there's a down power line here. And she goes, is it arcing and going like a snake? And I said, well, yes, it is. And she goes, get out of the house. She starts screaming, and I go, ah, and I run out of the house. And it was so stupid. But I did exactly, she panicked, and I panicked. You know, I did exactly what she said. And I think that, go ahead, Cheryl.
Lisa, here is what I am expecting from the defense. They need to call an expert in 911,
mm-hmm.
and they need to say, according to your protocol, if someone sees someone suspicious, should they follow them? And that person will say no. And they
mm-hmm.
will say, why is that? For their safety.
Right. Nothing more. Do we have any idea who they are going to put up tomorrow, the prosecution? Do we know who's on the witness list? I haven't checked.
I don't. I mean, I don't have any idea. But what I'm telling you is they're running out of people. They've
right.
had the police. They've had the crime scene tech. You know what I mean? They've had these ear witnesses. They've had the eyewitnesses. They've had the star witness, the last person to talk to him. We
mm-hmm.
got nothing. We got
mm-hmm.
nothing.
You know, just to play, you know, devil's advocate a little bit here, you know, the prosecution, I think, did a pretty good job during their opening statements when they pointed out that on the 911 call, George Zimmerman said, these assholes, they always get away. That doesn't make
mm-hmm.
George Zimmerman look good. And they also, they made a good point where George Zimmerman refused medical treatment and his injuries, you know, he did have injuries. That could
yeah.
help the defense. However, they were not, you know, life-threatening injuries or anything that he needed medical treatment for. So my question is, Cheryl, do you think that maybe this is not second-degree murder, but maybe this is something like manslaughter where he was reckless in what he did, where he did not need to pull out his gun, where his life was really not in danger and he had no reason to feel that he was about to die because he was in a scuffle with Trayvon Martin?
Right. Well, again, everybody knows my job here on Trisha's show. All I can tell you is what George has testified to and what George passed a polygraph. He
mm-hmm.
said when his head was being beaten upon the cement, he thought, I'm going to lose consciousness. And when I do, I can't fight back and he'll kill me. So it
right.
doesn't have to be life-threatening at that moment. It has to be, if I don't make a decision now to stop it, I'm not going to have the ability to make a decision in a minute. That's what George said immediately.
But you know what my problem with that is? You know, does that give everybody, when they're in a fight with someone, does that give them the the right to pull out a gun and shoot someone just because they're fight with someone, a physical altercation. That's my problem.
I understand, but let me ask you the opposite. If you're in a fight and you're losing it, do you just have to die? No, that's asinine. So if I'm in a knife fight and somebody pulls out a gun, I'm not going to sit there and just lose it. So again, even if George in some way started it, does he therefore have to die? The answer is going to be no. You have a right to defend your life to the end.
How tall is George? Do we know that?
He's like 5'6", I think. 5'5". He's smaller than
He's a little guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was slight at the time. He's huge now, but he was a slight man at the time.
Yeah, he really was.
He was smaller. There's no question.
Well, I'll tell you what.
The one witness they put up for the prosecution said the smaller one was the one being hurt. She assumed that was Trayvon because they put out a picture that he was 12.
That picture looks like he's a little kid in grade school.
Right.
It really did.
Again, they put out a picture that wasn't truthful.
And that was I felt, just a horrible thing to do because it misled the whole nation. And it really created problems where there didn't need to be problems. The truth is the truth. Just let it come out. Don't try and shade it and color it. You know, just let it be what it is. So, hey,
and
listen,
again,
kids.
George's past comes out, but Trayvon's can't.
Yeah.
They're not interested in the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Cheryl, I do have a question. Is there a possibility that George Zimmerman's defense will get up and say, we have no witnesses, thank you, Your Honor, and go straight to closing arguments?
That's what Holly Hughes and I talked about tonight after the show. And Holly said, if it keeps going this way, they have no reason to put it up. They have not met their burden of proof.
I think they'll ask the judge to dismiss the case.
Michael, what do you think?
They're going to do that no matter what.
Well, I want to speak about the judge. I thought she showed great prejudice today against the defense. I thought she was downright rude and offensive.
In what way? Because she was helping and trying to lead the witness, you felt?
Well, not that, but, I mean, mumble mouth herself. The poor defense attorney questioning her was simply trying to understand and make sure the jurors understood what she had said. I mean, you've got to have a degree in Creole to understand what she said. And then the prosecution is getting up and objecting, and she's sustaining, and he says, can I approach? No. I mean, she was just rude, I thought, many times to the defense attorney.
Cheryl McCollum, comment.
Here's my deal. She was on the stand too long for the limited fireworks we got. They never came at her like they should have. They have not thrown down on the table all her tweets and Facebook and et cetera.
I agree.
They should have. Which is the reason she has not been released. My feeling is she's going to be the last person they call back because she's the most disastrous of them all. And they've all had a moment of helping the defense. But you, when the prosecution keeps saying, ask and answer, all right, the jury knows. Yeah, we think she's a liar. She's admitted to being a liar. Yes, she's framing her answers to make George look like the aggressor. Can we move on? What else do you have? He has nothing else that he chose to put up right now. So, you know, get on with it. So I think, again, that part of the problem is there's a very fine line in proving your point, this person's a liar, and beating a dead horse. He should have been done with her hours before he was.
Oh, I
see. Now, that's what we've seen in the Jodi Arias case when she was on the stand for 18 days, when we had witnesses on the stand for weeks. And that judge allowed it and criticized her, and this judge moves it along. And I like that about her, even though I do think that she is a little bit pro-prosecution, but she does keep things going. This is not the trial of the summer that drags out all summer long like Casey Anthony did or like the Jodi Arias did. That trial started in like February or January, actually, and just ended. We're not going to see that in this case because she's moving it along, and I kind of like that about her. It's a little refreshing.
Well, Trisha, I know you're on limited time, but I've got to say one last thing before we get done.
Absolutely. I want to hear it.
Such a shift right now in the African-American community. They do not see George Zimmerman like they did last summer. And
the reason,
it's absolutely true, and I can prove it really easy for y'all. You yourself can go look at the tweets and the comments on Facebook and the blogs from African-Americans.
Where?
Their key witness was it's all over creation. She was a joke. They're making fun of her. They're calling her a liar. They're calling her a hood rat. They are not being kind to her. That is the reason you saw a press conference today. They've seen the blogs. They've seen Facebook. They've seen the tweets. They know what a disaster she is, and they're losing their most staunch advocates. They had no choice but to come out and say what a great job she did. And even when they spoke, they misspoke. He said he testified to what she observed. She didn't observe a damn thing. What
she
are you
heard
talking
it.
About?
Yeah, right.
And he misused several words. That's not helping anybody either. And the family, once again, did not speak. They should have. They should have thanked everybody. But he said, the last thing he said was, nobody in the country is going to think she wasn't credible. Nobody thinks she's credible.
Yeah, that's quite a bold statement.
He was trying to save the train wreck. So they know this is bad. It's real bad.
Well, and it looks like it'll probably get worse tomorrow. I'm really anxious to see what the court holds for us tomorrow in the Zimmerman trial. Michael from Minnesota, wrap things up. What would you like to say, my darling?
Well, I want to know what the prosecution gained by the phone records guy. I thought that was a big waste and a snooze. Did you get anything out of that?
I did, and I'll tell you, it was for the defense again.
Again, yeah.
And here's why. O'Mara got him to testify that if you engage a call, even if it lasts for 1 second, it comes up as a minute. Damn it, we got reasonable doubt again that Dee Dee was on the phone the amount of time that she said. It could have been 1 second, or it could have been a minute. In 1 second, she couldn't have heard the wet grass, the bump, the scuffle, and what are you doing around here, and get off, get off. She couldn't have heard that in 1 second. She could have said, Trayvon, 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 not in 1 second. So there's no proof they were on the phone for a whole minute. Thanks for stopping by. Every freaking witness has interjected reasonable doubt. Everyone. And these are the prosecution. If the defense starts calling people, he's walking. Even the lesser included, the jury's going to get sick of it. Because the jury's going to be like, who does the state have? You want me to put this man in prison because he got out of a car?
Right.
Come on now.
It's going to be almost insulting to them, probably, if this is really all they have.
And
but who knows?
Levi had commented that, you know, George got out to follow him. But I think, like Cheryl pointed out, he lost sight of him because he went between buildings.
He ran.
Right. So he was just getting out. They said, where did he go? And he was like, well, I don't know. Let me see. I lost sight of him. And that's when he said, these assholes always get away. And it was just frustration that he'd lost sight of him and he was going to have to get out of the truck.
You're having to get out of your car and it's raining. And you don't know where the guy's at.
So I didn't see it as this big malicious, I'm going to chase this guy down and find out what he's up to. He was simply trying to find out where he went, what direction he was going, so he could give accurate information.
That's right.
I just don't think it was a malicious, I'm going to hunt him down and shoot him.
Not one eyewitness says, and I saw this white guy following this kid. They don't have it. What is the proof? He followed him.
There isn't.
You basically told him to get out of the car and find an address. You told him to get out of the car and see which way he went.
That's how I see it.
That's how I see it. If you listen
it is
to
going
the tape,
to be
it's there.
A very interesting day tomorrow, to say the least. I think. I think the prosecution could wrap it up tomorrow. I really do. I don't know about
but
you guys, but I
end with a bang or something. We've got to get something from them.
Yeah, you would hope.
Yep.
You would hope, but
yeah,
you know,
the major players, the people that saw it, the people that heard it, the people that was, you know, the 7-Eleven clerk, the girlfriend. We've already heard from them. There's
yeah,
somebody
who next?
Else.
What can possibly
right.
be
else.
Next?
Nope. The parents won't testify. We're done.
I can't imagine. They're going to have to really, truly pull some sort of rabbit out of their hat, and it's got to be a biggie. And I don't see it happening. You know, it would be, you know, if I was on the jury, I would be insulted, I think, if this is really all the defense or the prosecution has in the Zimmerman trial, if I was on the jury, I'd be like, come on, you've got to have a little something more. I still, in my heart, believe that George Zimmerman is the one that is truly responsible, the adult with the gun. He had the power, but not he didn't do what they are claiming he did. And that has been cleared up. And I'm so grateful, Cheryl, to hear that it is really getting across to everybody in all of the communities that, you know, this isn't what it seemed to be last year. So, okay,
no.
Cheryl.
The poll tonight, oh, I'm sorry, Tricia. The
no,
poll
go right
tonight
ahead.
On After Dark, 69% of the people that called in said the defense won today. 69%.
Wow. And was that Michael or was that Levi that
you know
chimed
what this
in?
Shows? This shows that, and you know, maybe I'm wrong here, but if this is all the prosecution has, this can tell us why the Sanford PD and the prosecution initially did not charge George Zimmerman with anything, if this is all that the prosecution has. And
right.
they were
have
faulted
no
for it. We were told that there was we were told that there was a cover up, and what this trial proves now, if this is all the prosecution has, there was no cover up. There was simply not enough evidence to go on to prove that George Zimmerman murdered this child and that this was not self defense.
Very good.
He wasn't a child. He was a 6-foot-tall football playing stud.
Right.
You know, that whole child thing, he was a
you know,
big
again,
thug.
Michael, you're making a good point, because if this had been reversed, Trayvon would have been charged as an adult. He's not
and they
a
would
child. Have said,
yes. Right.
And I understand what you're saying, Tricia, but the reality is George didn't know he was the only one with a weapon.
No,
well,
he didn't.
True.
And the other guy was beating the shit out of him.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
You get put as someone who's 6'5 on top of me, I'd want to shoot him. If I, because I don't know how to fight, well,
right.
I would never want to shoot anyone, but if I was...
And the one eyewitness said he was swinging MMA style.
And that's
well,
harsh. That's yeah. really, if you know that style, man, that is deadly.
What
that
is that,
absolutely
MMA?
Deadly. It's the,
mixed
where the cage
art?
Fighting. Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, and it's really deadly. I mean, it's, oh, mixed martial arts. Yeah, it's bad. Well, on that happy note, kids, we're going to have to wrap it up for tonight. I am very anxious to see what happens tomorrow, because Cheryl, we might just be talking about the end of the case tomorrow night. It'll be an interesting show. Cheryl, are we looking at 9:00 Eastern tomorrow? Is that good for you?
I'm perfectly good with that.
Okay. Levi, please call back in. Michael, call back in. You save me every time during my show, because you come up, like I said, with the good questions that I think I should have said that. And come on, join us back. Everybody come back tomorrow, 9:00 Eastern. Okay, that is 6:00 Pacific. And we're going to be right back here with Trisha's True Crime Lady. Oh, I've got to do the legal goo. That's what I forgot. If I don't say the legal goo, I get in gooey trouble. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and I take no responsibility for them. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuths.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. In other words, if you get upset at something that you hear and you just can't take it, well, you just come to me. You don't worry about Forums for Justice or websleuths.com, because they have nothing to do with it. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you, Trisha.